Chris, when you're ready, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chris LeGault. I work at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center in Woods Hole, and I'm here today as the chair of your Scientific and Statistical Committee to report on our review of the Butterworth and Rademeyer paper. So the request to the SSC in this review was to review the paper based on eight different issues. Seven of these issues, issues A through G, were taken directly from the paper itself as issues that the paper identified as being important. And the last one, H, was added by the executive committee, and it relates closely with item C, but more formally describes it. So by way of background, sorry, I'm getting feedback. This paper, the first version of this paper, was produced in November of 2011, just prior to the meeting of the SARC. The SARC CIE, Center for Independent Expert Review Panel, decided not to review the paper during the meeting. And then a second version of the paper, which included some additional analyses, was made available in January of 2012. We and the SSC had a very brief discussion about this paper at our January 25th meeting, and then were tasked with an official review during our March 28th meeting. So I'd like to begin by thanking four of the major players in the Gulf of Maine cod assessment. Doug Butterworth and Rebecca Rademeyer are the authors of the paper that is under review here, and they also participated as members of the working group. Liz Brooks was the chair of the working group, and Mike Palmer was the lead assessment scientist. All four made major contributions to the assessment and made very large efforts to communicate these results over the past two SSC meetings. I'd also like to thank Jay Kreitzer for chairing the review at our March 28th meeting. So during the meeting, the way we proceeded was we began with a brief overview from Liz Brooks, the chair of the working group, of how the working group operated. And then we worked through the topics in order in our terms of reference. For each topic, Doug Butterworth gave a brief summary of the points in the paper. Liz Brooks provided a brief response, and then the SSC had discussion. There were some issues where the two agreed, and so there was really not any need for much SSC discussion. We passed over those relatively quickly. However, on two topics, topic C, the starting year, and H, the stock recruitment relationship, and to a lesser extent, topic G, the selectivity, these were received most of our time for discussion, as these were identified as having potential implications for the assessment. So to work through the conclusions, the first three here on the screen, A, B, and D, I've moved C to the end because it's highly related with the last one. The Pope versus Baranoff, this was two different ways of dealing with the catch equation. There was agreement that there was little difference in results, and this was not important. In topic B, the starting numbers at age vector, the SSC agreed with the approach used in the SAW-SARC to estimate abundance at age instead of assuming an equilibrium condition. Topic D, the additional variance when fitting the tuning indices. Both the models allowed for this, and this was decided it was not a major issue. Regarding topic E, whether the tuning indices were treated in mass or in numbers, it was noted that this was a relatively small effect, and the SSC reiterated past conclusions that this should be considered in future assessments, but that we did not think it was a major issue in this particular assessment. Topic F, fitting the catch-it age proportions. The paper presented to us by Butterworth and Rademeyer did not directly compare their approach to that used within the model that was used in the Gulf of Mankato assessment, and so the SSC could not really comment much on this issue other than that further exploration would be needed. For topic G, the difference between domed and flat selectivity for surveys, this is an issue that has arisen in many assessments, and even though it did not appear to have much effect on the Gulf of Mankato assessment, continued work is needed, and the basic issue is that when you have a domed selectivity pattern, it has the potential to create cryptic biomass. In other words, fish that are estimated to be there, but that are not well sampled by any gear. So the final two points were the ones where we spent the vast majority of our discussion during the meeting. Topic C, the starting year for the assessment. The SSC did not feel they were in a position to recommend any specific year to be used. Instead, we made the recommendation that historical productivity needs to be evaluated and listed three particular aspects. Statistical decision criteria, in other words, the math in whatever model is being used, the trade-offs between information content and uncertainty. Basically, the further back in time you go, the more uncertain you get about the data. And at some point, you're so uncertain that you're just adding noise to the assessment and you're not actually adding any signal. And how to make that distinction is not always clear. And finally, understanding historical conditions. This comes down to something that's outside the math of the model and relates to what is typically called the red face test. Does the assessment make sense relative to what we know about what's going on? These same issues also arise in the estimation of a stock recruitment curve, and this is because in order to estimate a stock recruitment curve, you want the longest time series possible. And so you have the same issues that I just listed arising here, and the one issue that the SSC suggested is to consider first principles. Is there any reason why a particular shape of this relationship should occur or not? And then the SSC proposed three questions to frame the issue in future assessments. The first, is there any evidence for a stock-recruit relationship? And by this we mean plot the dots on the graph, and do you see any sort of trend between them, or is it total scatter? Two, if there is some sort of relationship, what is its most likely form? And this also relates back to that consideration of first principles. And finally, if it passes both one and two, how do you go about estimating the stock recruit curve? And this is where it becomes highly technical. But there are some ways that can be considered. As you've read the report, you'll see that we are suggesting that perhaps one way to deal with these issues is to put forward decision framework analysis, whereby we would run the model with one assumption, follow it all the way through to catch advice, and then make a different choice for how to deal with a stock recruit relationship, follow that all the way through, and then show what the implications are for what if you use the advice from model A when model B is correct and vice versa. That's just one potential way of dealing with these difficult both statistical and assessment questions. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Chris. Terry, my understanding is that Tom has got a presentation on Gulf of Maine cod as well, and maybe we should have that, and then as questions come up for that, Chris can be there too to see how they mesh together.
That makes good sense to me, Mr. Chair. So I'm just going to tee it off quickly, and I want to welcome Fiona and thank Tom and Ann, who have been extremely busy doing multiple analysis and pulling together a huge pile of materials in time for today's meeting. Since we all last met, the PDT's met three times, the committee twice, and as Chris just reported, the SSC. The committee's been focused primarily on Gulf of Maine cod planning, and last week we really began work on the sector framework. The committee, as you'll hear, has only made limited progress on the ABC framework and the groundfish habitat action. And both Tom and Ann have presentations, and I have a series of committee motions, but because we have not much time and a lot to cover, I'm going to turn it over to Tom for a presentation on Gulf of Maine cod planning.
Good afternoon. I think many of us were surprised by the results from SARC 53 and what the status of Gulf of Maine cod turned out to be. And we've been wrestling with a response to that assessment for the last few months. Chris just talked a little bit about the Butterworth and Rademeyer paper. I'm going to try and outline some possible next steps in the process so everybody can understand where we're headed. And then ultimately there will be a need for a council decision. And Terry, as he mentioned, has got a motion from the committee. A lot of our attention, quite rightly, has been focusing on what the catch levels are for fishing year 2012 and 2013. But I think as you wrestle with some of these issues, it's useful to think a little bit of the longer-term picture. If we're not careful, I think some of the decisions we make now might constrain some future options. So I think we need to remember that as of right now, by May 1st, 2014, we're going to implement a modified rebuilding plan that will probably be or could turn out to be a different fishing mortality rate than what's needed in May 1st of 2013 to end overfishing. And under our normal cycle, what that means is the November before each of those dates is when we have to vote on this stuff. So we'll be adopting the new ABCs for Gulf of Maine cod in November of 2012 and the new rebuilding plan probably in November of 2013. And we have to remember that next year we're not only dealing with Gulf of Maine cod, but there are a number of stocks that, if we follow the cycle laid out in Amendment 16, we'll be setting ABCs for 2014 to 2016 going forward. In fact, that's for almost all the groundfish stocks, I believe. There have been a number of issues that were identified as major concerns that need to be addressed. Some of these, the SSC has given the council some advice on how to proceed, on how to address them. Generally, the four on the top, questions of catch per unit effort or landings per unit of effort, the discard mortality assumptions, the recreational data that was input, and then questions about the stock recruitment relationship. Some of these, and basically the ones on top, could be addressed through a Gulf of Maine cod assessment that would be done this year. The other large issue is stock structure, and while we're making some plans to get to work on the stock structure issue, it's unlikely, and I would dare say it's nearly certain, that those issues will not be addressed in the 2012 assessment. You might ask why not. The bottom line is that we don't think the work is going to be done in time. The issue of stock structure, we don't expect to be done in time to fold it into an assessment that can be completed this year. So we've got a couple paths And these are, you know, we could sit here all day and dream up probably a dozen of these, but I think these are kind of the most likely options that we've got facing us right now. There are plans in the works to have a meeting to discuss the spatial structure of COD, the first workshop anyway, in June of 2012. June 12th through 14th, I think, are the dates in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And then we could have an updated Gulf of Maine COD assessment sometime in the late summer. By that, I mean late August, September time frame. And this would be an update, much like the updates that were just completed. But in this update, we could probably get in the wreck catch, the discard mortality questions, and the perhaps the stock recruit curve, though that's something you usually do in a benchmark, and then the other one, CPUE and LPUE. The wreck catch issue is one that's a little questionable depending on timing of this updated assessment. And then we have scheduled a Whitehake and Georges Bank COD benchmark. I call it late fall. You might call it early winter. The meeting date is, I think, the last week in November. And assuming that the stock structure would need revision, then you could probably plan on COD benchmarks, however many would be needed, sometime in 2013. From the Council's point of view, I think we would want them in June of 2013. It's not clear that the Center could deliver them in June of 2013. So that's one possible path. Another one is slightly different, same spatial workshop, but rather than do an updated Gulf of Maine COD assessment, push back and do a benchmark assessment in the late fall, this November meeting, that late November meeting. This would allow perhaps a more detailed investigation of the Gulf of Maine COD assessment. We could conceivably, it's a benchmark, you could conceivably consider different assessment models. You could conceivably take a bigger, harder look at the stock recruitment issues. And then, assuming stock structure would change, you would come back and do another COD benchmark in the summer of, or fall of 2013. So if you're counting, I think that means that this path on the right means it would that the center would basically do somewhere on the order of five COD benchmarks over about an 18-month period. Mike Palmer would not have any hair left. So if you look at these, and this is the first approach, there's some advantages to it. On the right side of the page, the assessment would focus on some narrow issues. I don't know if you should view that as an advantage or a disadvantage. It makes it a little easier to do the assessment, but if you're interested in a broader look at things, that's a disadvantage. The 2013 ABC won't, for Gulf of Maine COD, won't incorporate the new COD stock structure should one be determined to be appropriate. And this is an issue under both of them. When the COD stock structure is done, depending on when the stock assessment is done, there's not a whole lot of time for the management system to react to that if we were to get a rebuilding plan in place by 2014. The second approach has some of the same issues. It's a benchmark, so you can consider a broader range of ideas. Still won't get the new stock structure into the benchmark. As I pointed out, you'll have multiple COD benchmarks over 18 to 24-month period. And there's a bullet in here in the middle that, as you'll hear, the committee doesn't like this bullet at all, but we basically can pretty much get three benchmark assessments in at a meeting. We've got, if we have two COD benchmarks and there's another stock, surf clams, planned for November, something has to drop out, and what I wrote in here is Whitehake, and as you'll hear from the committee, they don't think Whitehake should drop out at that meeting. So what I've done here is kind of outlined some possible approaches for COD, but there's other things to be concerned about here. How are we going to set the ABCs if there's a delay between our new understanding of stock structure and benchmark assessments? For instance, what if we get all the stock structure information resolved in February of 2013? What do we do about the May 2013 COD quotas? They won't be based on that new COD stock structure. It'll be impossible. These two schedules don't say anything about the basis for the 2014-2016 ABCs. Now, we've got some updated assessments that you just heard about for 12 of the stocks, but for pollock and the winter flounders, those assessments are going to start to be getting pretty old by the time the 2015 or 2016 ABC rolls around. Their terminal years, I believe, are around 2009. So, you know, by 2016, that's a seven-year-old assessment. And as you saw earlier, our projections may not work too well. I'm being very groundfish-centric here. What about assessments for the other stocks? If we change stock structure, when do we get the TMGC coordination in? So, if you allow me to be a rambler here for just another minute, I'll show you why Dr. Karp might be getting ready to gnash his teeth over in the corner. And, George, that's a twofer. If we try and put all the blocks together here, this is kind of what we need to do. We need to adopt the ABCs on this timeline. I apologize, it's probably too small to read in the back. But, you know, this is the timeline for when things have to occur and when we have to take action. If you match it up with the current, and this is just the benchmark assessment for the next three cycles, these are the stocks that are on the schedule now. Georges Bank Cod, Whitehake, and Surf Clams, followed by Striped Bass and Bluefish, and probably something else, plus the track, then Northern Shrimp, Tilefish, and Ilex. So if you look at my first approach, you got the stock workshop off the page here, off to the left, then some sort of Gulf of Maine Cod update, followed by Georges Cod and Whitehake and Surf Clam in November. Then you got the new cod stock benchmarks, which will probably be a pretty serious effort, assessment effort, preempting perhaps the June 2013 SARC. And then maybe we get back on track with Northern Shrimp and Tilefish and Ilex later. And these are just trying to show you the complexities here, not saying that this is cast in concrete. If you go the other way, it doesn't look a whole lot better. If you go, you know, it moves things around, you get rid of the update early, but everything else kind of falls in. And then, you know, there's a lot of things that I haven't even talked about. I mean, I don't know if anybody noticed besides Erling, but once I got rid of the red on there, Surf Clams fell off the page, you know, so where did that one go? Pollock and winter flounder assessments, you know, when do those come up? At one time, I think this may be changing here, but one time we were thinking that we would have a scallop benchmarks around 2013. I think now people are talking about pushing that back into 2014. I don't know that we've got the next monkfish benchmark on the assessment schedule yet. I'm not sure how far down that is. So all of these issues are going to have to be juggled. They may not be important to us here on the New England Council because we may be focused primarily on the cod issues, but clearly they're going to be an issue for the Center and for the Mid-Atlantic Council. So I think we really need to keep all these in mind. But today we really have one specific question and one specific committee motion, and that is, what does the Council prefer for Gulf of Maine Cod for 2013? A Gulf of Maine Cod updated assessment, which would take place late summer, early fall, and by that I mean probably roughly in September, or a benchmark assessment for Gulf of Maine Cod that would be completed at the November-December SARC. That concludes my presentation. I'm not sure if there's any questions on the schedule or questions to Chris.
Erling, I hope you have had your ears blocked during this discussion.
Well, I realize that the Gulf of Maine Cod is a big issue up here, and I appreciate that. But also, surf clam is a major issue for us in the Mid-Atlantic, and you know, we need to get that information out too.
Terry, do you have a motion?
Yeah, in order to get the conversation going, I've got a committee motion. It passed the committee 802, and the committee recommends that the Council request a Gulf of Maine Cod benchmark assessment in 2012. That assessment should address the 10 priority issues identified in the Massachusetts Fisheries Institute by the Institute in its April 3, 2012 letter to Sam Rosh. And for those of you who haven't yet had a chance to read it, this letter is referred to in the correspondence section of the groundfish. The correspondence section.
That's a committee motion. Doesn't require a second. Council members, comments?
Mark.
I don't know if Jim or Paul can answer this. What data streams would be increased for you to tackle this in 2012, such as what trawl surveys would be added, what catch streams, that kind of thing?
For a 2012 survey, we would have, or the 2012 assessment, we would have the catch data through 2011, and all of the survey information through the spring of 2012. There would also be the discard information would be updated. And we would have, for the first time, a full year of sector-based estimates on discard rates. And then, finally, the MRIP data would be included for the period 2004 through 2011. There, the adjustment for the years prior to 2003 and earlier for the MRFIS to MRIP conversion. That discussion is continuing. There's a subcommittee meeting today to talk about some of those adjustment factors. Oh, the other thing, sorry, the other thing would be if the analysis of the commercial CPUE data bears fruit, that information would be another additional data stream that could be used in this assessment.
Terry Stockwell.
The committee had a prolonged discussion on this prior to this motion and recognized that while the stock structure issue would not be addressed in the next benchmark, that all the issues that Paul just raised would be, and that any and all improvements to the 2013 specs would be far better than position than we're in right now. The committee also discussed and recommended that the council pursue a Whitehake assessment at the same time as the Georges Bank and Gulf of Maine COD benchmark assessments, but did recognize the importance of the surf clam fishery to the mid and thought that the NRCC would be best in a position to think this through.
Anyone else to the motion? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, got a lot of paper here. We have the SSC's report, which the committee didn't have, and it appears to me that this might fit in here well, given what Dr. LaGault has reported. Basically, it looks like, and, you know, if you feel I'm mischaracterizing this, please let me know, that a number of issues were declared not to be, you know, important one way or the other, and other issues need further exploration. And it looks to me like if we get into the fall of 2012, people would have a chance to explore these further, and maybe we could have, hopefully, some kind of mind meld here where maybe we could all agree on a way forward. And I don't know if people have had a chance to examine the Mass Marine Fisheries Institute letter, but that raises a number of the issues that were raised to the SSC as well as some others, and it gives people some time to explore them and perhaps, you know, incorporate answers to these questions into an updated assessment. So, I mean, personally, I think this is the best we can make out of a bad situation.
Anyone else on the council? Doug Grout.
I guess I would like to hear a little bit more about the discussion of the Groundfish Committee as to how much more you anticipate getting out of these assessments by having a benchmark assessment in the fall and then another benchmark assessment the following summer. I thought, you know, my understanding was there was a certain amount of things that the center could update, the CPUE, the MRFs estimates, for just another turn of the crank, and then focus on a benchmark assessment for COD based on some of the spatial workshop. That's where I see that there's a potential for a major change in, or some kind of a change in the outcome here. I'm not sure that we're going to get that significant a change by doing a benchmark assessment as opposed to a turn of the crank. So I'd like to hear more about the discussion as to why, you know, clearly there was a strong support for option two, where we'd have essentially two benchmark assessments in 2 years.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. There was, as I said, a significant discussion about this and other issues. Essentially, it falls down to timing. To turn the crank at an early fall update may or may not have included the CPUE, the MREP, and the 100% assumed discard mortality issues that were raised by the SSC. Additionally, as Dave Gaethel was just mentioning, the recommendations from the Marine Fisheries Institute address a number of the recommendations from that were consistent with the SSC, and the committee as more or less a whole felt that, while not perfect, it would be put us in a far better position than turning the crank and waiting another year to do the whole thing. And we're realizing that in my words only, the 6,700 metric tons is a gift, and if we're looking at somewhere, you know, significantly less than that, every metric ton of fish counts.
Just to follow up then, does the Science Center think that they can do this heavy lifting of two benchmark assessments and a spatial analysis within 2 years?
Yeah, I'm going to respond to that. In addition to the issue that you raised about doing so many assessments in a short amount of time, I think we need clarification about the motion because there have been a number of things requested on Gulf of Maine Cod that are kind of in different parts. The report that Chris LaGault just presented to you was on the Butterworth and Rademeyer modeling paper, and the motion is silent about that. So we would need, if Gulf of Maine Cod were to be put on the schedule for an assessment and we have to develop terms of reference for it, there will be that initial draft where we write what the terms of reference are, and they can be either general or specific. If the trend lately is for people to be very specific in their recommendations for terms of reference, and I would expect some people to come in and say one term of reference is to consider the Butterworth and Rademeyer model and basically take the SSC report and consider those three major topics that they discussed but actually didn't come to any firm conclusions about and kick that up to a SARC for determination. And just evaluating those three topics could be a topic for Gulf of Maine Cod for a week. In addition, we have the four issues that were identified by the SSC as being priority issues, the LPUE, MRIP, stock ID, and there's one more, the discard mortality. So I'm assuming that's also a priority to include in these terms of reference. Now we have the 10 issues that were identified in the MFI letter, which many of which were addressed in December by the former SARC panel. But I'm just unclear as some of these are general and some are very specific, and I really would need a lot more clarification when we develop terms of reference for Gulf of Maine Cod to understand how much we're being asked to do, and then for us to evaluate how long it would take to do it and to peer review it. And that will determine how many other stocks we can include, how long the meeting will be. Is it now a two-week or a three-week SARC? So those are the sorts of clarifications that I would need in order to really understand the motion.
Bill? Just to follow up, if I may, I think that obviously there's a lot of detail aspects of this that need to be resolved, and it's going to require some process, and that can't be done here today. The expectation perhaps would be that we could focus in on some of these more specifically at the NRCC meeting and between now and then. Our expectation in coming into this meeting was that we would be asked to take on the benchmark Gulf of Maine Cod assessment in November, December. And within reason, obviously depending exactly on the terms of reference, the way that it's framed, we feel that that is something that we could undertake. Our ability to do that as well as the three other assessments that are on the table is lacking, and we would need to discuss, as Terry suggested with the NRCC, exactly how to manage those trade-offs. And the issues regarding future year assessments are complex. I think it is wise to have a singular motion before the Council right now to discuss what the next step is with the Gulf of Maine Cod assessment, but obviously we have to look collectively at the consequences of whatever decision is made on what's going to happen in 13 and 14.
Any other council comments? Doug?
So if we go with a benchmark assessment in November for Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank Cod, including these are the 10 priorities, this needs to be addressed. That's clearly what the Groundfish Committee is asking to be in there. Does that mean the question that Jim had, are we going to include the I didn't look at these 10 priorities because I don't know what's on them. So does that include the four priorities outside of the spatial work that the SSC?
The three priorities that that could be analyzed during the time period between now and then.
Okay, so then the final question is, so the only difference that we would have between, you know, the fall benchmark assessment of the two species and then the following year, a summer-fall cod benchmark assessment, is you're assuming that we'll have the spatial structure work done, and then that will be another change or update, potential change or update.
That's correct.
Bill.
Just another piece of this for your consideration is that in initiating this cod structure evaluation, which will be at the workshop in June, the sort of general expectation is that this would reap some useful conclusions within a year. We'll know more after that first workshop with regards to exactly what the questions are and what it's going to take to answer them. So I think I'm a little bit cautious about committing to re-engaging on a particular schedule until we get some feedback from that process.
So you're saying that we could propose this type of a schedule where there'd be a new cod benchmark again in summer fall, but it all depends on what comes out of this spatial workshop, and that we may, depending on what comes out of that, we may not have the information for a new a second benchmark assessment
not speaking to what the 2012 to 2013, whether we would be in a position to do something again in 13 or not. We'd need to get some feedback from this process.
Dave Gaither.
Yeah, I think in answer to Doug's question, it's very hard to predict the future here. I mean, we have one more piece of the puzzle now with the SSC's report that we didn't have when the committee met. We can't presuppose what's going to come out of that stock boundary workshop. It may come back as status quo, as an example, so there may not be a need for anything to change in the summer, fall. What the committee did feel is that something done this summer, which is basically a turn of the crank, add in another survey, a little bit more information. We probably wouldn't have the updated MREP stuff. We wouldn't have the CPUE. We wouldn't have any of the things that might lead to any change in the assessment. We'd basically get back a number that's probably going to look pretty similar to the number we've got right now. If we wait till the fall and we have more information, what Dr. Rago described, and you know, Dr. Buttersworth gets to work on the issues outlined by the SSC here, that maybe all these people could meet. By then we'll have some kind of preliminary report from the stock boundary working group. It'll probably just be preliminary, but it'll give some sense of whether anything happened there or not. Combined with these other issues, although it's listed as 10, if you take the SSC report and take, so a lot of these overlap. I mean, there's not 25 issues here. There's probably still maybe 10 total. I'm not even sure there's that many. But there starts to become what appears to be at least the possibility that, you know, we'll have something that's worth people sinking their teeth into to see what happens. And it would still occur at a time that's early enough that with a little luck and a lot of skill, maybe we could still have something in place for May 2013 if it changes somewhat. You know, either way. I mean, it could go up, could go down. I don't know. But it's early enough in the process that it's still theoretically possible to have something in May. If we wait much beyond the November-December time period, recognizing you won't get that report till January, early February, we really have no choice but to set things. Well, we have two choices. Congress steps in and suspends Magnuson so we don't have to move to these limits that are envisioned for 2013, or we set them and we tie everybody to the pier May 1st, 2013. Those are the two choices. And this is a third option, which is, to me, probably the best way forward in the situation we're in.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to run this through a little bit, ask a question of Tom. So Gulf of Maine COD would be updated in the framework you're working on with the other nine stocks. Use this benchmark, and it would go forward with the other nine stocks with a range from X to Y, and then the service would pick the appropriate catch limits. Is that how it would work?
I mean, right now what we think we would do is exactly what we had planned to do in 2011. The framework document would analyze a range of like possible ABCs for Gulf of Maine COD. We would set it broadly enough that we would be pretty confident that the results of the assessment would fall within that range. Once the assessment was released, we would have the SSC meet or hold a conference call to recommend an ABC to the council, which the council presumably would approve at its January council meeting, which hopefully is in time for the service to slip it into the proposed rule for those ABCs. It would be identical to what we had planned to happen last fall. Of course, that's not what happened. But
okay, I'm going to go to the audience for any comments on this motion. Vito?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. Just wanted to clarify what Doug had said just to make sure. We support the MFI letter and the intent of the motion by the Groundfish Committee, but when you read the motion, it sort of looks like it goes to the exclusion potentially of the first three points that were in the letter, the Butterworth, Radmeier being one of them. So just want to make sure that whatever's in the discussion documents that comes out in the final, you know, when you're drafting terms of reference, as Jim was saying, we want to make sure we don't lose those 3 points, that it's not exclusive to just the 10 points that are in the letter. I think that's what Doug had brought up, and that was going to be our concern. We want to make sure that there's really 13 points for the fall benchmark assessment that are articulated in the letter, but the motion talks about the 10, I believe, right?
Thank you. Rich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to bring something up to the council's and the audience's attention. When I speak to the vessels, when I speak to boats that are, say, for example, they're fishing up in the Gulf of Maine or Georgia's during the wintertime this year, and they were having a hard time bringing in trips. And I asked them why, and they said, well, it's the temperature of the water. We had a warm winter. And so, speaking of fishermen that fish for 30, 40 years, so I said, the fish aren't there, they're gone. No, we see them. But they're up in the water column because the bottom of the ocean is warmer. So they're up in the water column, we just can't catch them. So my point is that I look back in history in the year 1928, we did have a warm winter. And I don't know if anyone's aware of it, Tom, please. In 1928, Massachusetts put the codfish on their license plate. Everyone can see it. Because of the sacred cod. Well, what happened in 1928, there was a bad year fishing. And the fishermen accused the government or the state for putting the codfish on the plate where it was swimming away from Massachusetts. Being how superstitious they are, but it was a year that they did have a problem. So with that at hand, 1929, the fishermen got their way. The fish is swimming towards Massachusetts. A friend of mine collects license plates, and he's been doing it for years, and he asked me about 6 months ago if I knew about the cod issue in 28 and 29. I said, no, what are you talking about? And it's true that the fish was turned around, started swimming back to Massachusetts, and they had a better year the following year. So my point is that, you know, just history with that, it's an example that fish come and they go and they don't show up. But the point is if the Bigelow was doing their survey in 28, we would have to live with that for how many years? So I think a lot of the problems that we're seeing today, and I'm just sitting in the audience, and it's just like we have a disaster. We have a disaster with the cod, and everything's a problem. And I think it all stems down to something's going on with the surveys. Fishermen are saying that, and hopefully later on we'll be able to talk to you about yellowtail, Georgia Bank yellowtail. Gulf of Maine cod has nothing on Georgia Bank's yellowtail for the fleet. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? Back to the council. Terry.
Just to follow up to Vito's comment that it was the committee's intent that those three issues were to be included and that the MFI recommendations were on top of that.
Rodney.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to ask the council to send a letter to Massachusetts to put the codfish and yellowtail back on the license plate, if that's appropriate.
Swimming which way, Rodney?
Towards Massachusetts.
Anyone else? Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the nub of the issue here is the stock structure, and to proceed with this motion absent a revised understanding of that and a thorough investigation of that, I think, is committing to a whole bunch of work before we have the most fundamental issue level of uncertainty dealt with. I think I'm going to oppose the motion because of that, but I'm also going to oppose because some of these suggestions here just, I guess I would characterize them as nutty in some sense. The idea that we're going to, given the experience we've seen before, we're going to calibrate stock assessment models with commercial catch per unit effort. They started writing papers on this in 1964 about hyperstability, Pelahamu and Dickey, and somebody's written one every year for commercial and recreational species. They're going to do a whole lot of work here. Some of it's not going to, some of it doesn't make any sense. And some of it's unlikely to show very much. The distribution of cod is patchy so that we have what fish is it? I mean, come on. We're going to do a lot of work here before we have the nub of the issue really even addressed. And that's the stock structure. Have the workshop. Get that resolved. And that will give you some sense of what direction to go in after that relative to benchmarking assessments. Thank you.
Laura.
I was worried I was in the penalty box for advocating anarchy. my only question is, because we've been discussing a lot of the points that are in this letter since the January council meeting, I guess I naively assumed that the Science Center was already getting to work on some of these questions. So my question is if we don't pass this, do we just stay in the hold pattern? And do we need to pass this in order to get the Science Center to be looking at some of these issues?
Bill?
We are, in fact, working on many of these issues. So I think the real issue is just the timing of when we bring things together in an assessment and how comprehensive that assessment will be.
Anyone else in the council? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Thirteen in favor. Opposed? Two opposed. Abstention? One. 13-2-1. The motion carries. Terry.
I'm going to switch gears and bring Annie up for an update on the sector management framework.
We had done a little bit of work on the sector framework with the PDT before the January council meeting, but then we ran out of time and didn't give an update then. So I was going to sort of start at the beginning here and say, tell you what's going on with the sector framework and where we're at with it. This sector framework came out of the workshop that we had in October that was on lessons learned in sector management. It was on the priorities for this year. To do a framework action on issues that had come out of the workshop and issues that were identified by the groups in the workshop. So far, the issues that the Groundfish Committee has identified that are going into this framework are the issue of ACE carryover and potentially increasing or changing the amount of ACE that's allowed to be carried over, and sector monitoring issues. And on the ACE trading issue, the PDT hasn't done all that much work yet. Because we are waiting for a letter from the regional office on policy guidance. The council has submitted a letter. We got a letter from the Science Center, and we wrote a letter in response with some questions, and we're looking for a little bit more guidance before the PDT really goes down the road of working on that issue in earnest. But we have made quite a bit of progress on sector monitoring issues. The PDT has started to put together a white paper on sector monitoring, which went out in the council material, so you should all have a copy. And what the paper consists of so far is an outline of what's going to be in the paper and how we're sort of tackling this topic. And we have some information on program goals and on funding for monitoring. Those are the two sections that have been filled in. And we're sort of approaching this like a living document. The PDT will continuously update the white paper and send out versions of it as it is updated so that the committee and the council can keep track of the work that's been done and refer back to how we got to where we are with the paper. So I'll go over the outline of the white paper briefly so that you know what we're doing with the monitoring. The first section of the paper is program goals and objectives. And the approach that the PDT identified for this sector framework was to start by having the council identify goals for the monitoring program and then to have the standards and the regulations for monitoring and the monitoring practices to sort of fall out of those goals because without knowing exactly what we need, it's hard to know exactly how to get it. So the committee has identified some preliminary goals, and they had a little bit of back and forth with the PDT. I'll talk about those in a minute, but I'll just go through the rest of the outline first. The second section of the paper should be monitoring program standards. We're going to talk about data needs and other monitoring outputs as determined by the program goals. Like I said, once the goals are set, it should be pretty clear from the goals what the data needs are from the monitoring program. And then we'll summarize what the current monitoring requirements are and essentially look at what changes are needed to meet the goals and to meet the requirements that are necessary for the goals so that we have a comprehensive, sensible monitoring program. And I want to be clear that when we're talking about monitoring with the PDT and with the work the committee's done, the idea is to look at a comprehensive program that includes potentially elements of dockside monitoring, ETSI monitoring, and or electronic monitoring, and should use those in a complementary way, if at all, or you know, pick and choose amongst those what works for the fishery. So we're not only talking about ETSI monitoring with this action. And then there's some other considerations that the PDT is doing work on and will do work on. One is standards for accuracy and precision. And the next is biological and management uncertainty associated with monitoring. Maybe some work to quantify what type of uncertainty is involved with different levels of monitoring. The next section would be on observer bias. And the PDT has done quite a bit of work on observer bias and also selection bias for monitored groundfish trips, but it's just not quite ready to go out yet, so probably at the next council meeting there will be something ready on observer bias. Full retention is another issue that the PDT is looking at and what issues would be associated with a full retention fishery. The next is funding mechanisms and cost sharing for monitoring program, and then monitoring program safety. And then essentially the paper will sort of mash those all together and see what comes out of it. And also there will be case studies from other regions that are similar to ours or that have lessons learned in monitoring as an appendix and as a basis for comparison with the paper. So like I said, so far the PDT has done work on goals and on funding for monitoring programs. So I'll go through the goal first. The goals section first. And also, the committee did get a presentation from Amy Van Atten from the Northeast Fisheries Observer Program on an electronic monitoring pilot project and also on costs of the current monitoring program. And so those are also things that the committee and the PDT are looking at. So for the goals, we did have a section in the white paper that looked at developing goals generally and went through that with the committee. I won't go through that whole thing again because it's quite long. But I will read the goals that the committee has proposed. I believe there's a motion on this, but the goals themselves aren't in the motion. So we'll just go over them. The first goal is to improve documentation of catch. And the committee identified the goals, and then the PDT said we need more clarification on what these goals are. And so they proposed objectives, and then the committee approved the objectives that went with each goal. So for that first goal, to improve documentation of catch, the objectives are to determine total catch and effort for each sector and common pool of target or regulated species, to determine catch by area to ensure accurate catch accounting while maintaining as much flexibility as possible to enhance fleet viability, and the third objective is to achieve a coverage level sufficient to minimize the effects of potential monitoring bias. The second goal is to reduce the cost of monitoring. And the objectives are to streamline data management and eliminate redundancy, to explore options for cost sharing and deferment of costs to industry, and to recognize opportunity costs of insufficient monitoring. The third goal is to incentivize reducing discards. And the objectives for that goal are to determine the discard rate by the smallest possible strata while maintaining cost effectiveness, and also to collect information by gear type to accurately calculate discard rates. The fourth goal is to provide additional data streams for stock assessments. I think we actually changed that to provide improved data streams for stock assessments, so the version that went out may have not been updated. And the objectives for that one are to reduce management and/or biological uncertainty, and to perform biological sampling if it may be used to enhance accuracy of mortality or recruitment calculations. And then the fifth goal is to enhance safety of the monitoring program. And the final goal is to perform a periodic review of the monitoring program for effectiveness. So since the PDT was sort of waiting to hear what the final goals were before proceeding on work in certain areas, they plugged ahead with what else they could, and one of those was on cost sharing and funding for a monitoring program. I think that, you know, everyone's sort of gotten the message loud and clear that whatever program is designed, it has to be the least costly, you know, the most inexpensive possible if the industry is going to be able to afford any portion of the monitoring. So we thought funding was a very important issue. So in the white paper, there's also a description of different methods, different models for cost sharing between the industry and the government, essentially. The first is the traditional industry-funded model, and then the license fee model, the cost recovery model, the lease credit model, quota set-asides, and public-private partnerships. And one thing in terms of the industry-funded model that we looked at and that the committee looked at was possibly differentiating who was responsible for what portion of the cost of monitoring. And there's a motion on that which makes that pretty clear, so I won't go into that too much in detail except to say that that is something that has been used in other regions. And finally, the PDT put together a white paper in response to a motion from the committee on looking at the possibility of taking some of the buffer that's set aside for management uncertainty and auctioning off the fish associated with that buffer in order to raise funds for monitoring. There are some issues with that practice, but it is something that the PDT and the committee are continuing to look at. So I think that covers it for my overview. I tried to keep it as short as possible, but if anyone has any more specific questions about the work in the paper or about the funding or the goals, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Amy. Terry, do you have any motions that would direct our discussion on this?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. I got one committee motion related on the goals and objectives and five related to funding. And with your indulgence, I'd make the first motion on the goals and objectives. It's a committee motion that passed 10-01. Is to move forward with goal number one, except for bullet number two, and for bullet number three, add while maintaining as much flexibility as possible to enhance fleet viability. Goals 2-6 remain as written. These goals, at least in the version of the white paper that I have, are on page 11.
It's a committee motion, doesn't require a second. Discussion. David Pierce.
Yeah, relative to this issue and monitoring, sector monitoring, I just want to bring to the Council's attention something I tried to do at the Groundfish Committee, relative to sector monitoring, and I did not prevail, but I at least wanted to bring the Council's attention to it because I consider it to be an extremely important element of sector monitoring. And that is described in handout number one under Groundfish on page 6, where I attempted to put in another goal and a set of objectives that relate to improving our understanding of sector structure, operation, and evolution relative to five very important points. Now, obviously, I'm not making a motion, Mr. Chairman, because I violate the Pierce rule that you implemented early on this morning. But again, I would just wanted to call it to the Council's attention that this sector monitoring initiative that we are undertaking is silent on our monitoring such things as the financial stability of sectors and their members, the distributive effects of sector ACE leasing and fishing behavior in the context of Magnuson-Stevens national standards and the like. I'm not going to read through the list, so I'm bringing it to your attention. I guess I'm saying I haven't given up on this yet, but I'm not making a motion today relative to any of these particular points, only to express my disappointment that we have a very narrow initiative, relative to sector monitoring that, frankly, is going to do a very inadequate job relative to our understanding sectors and their overall health. And what we might want to do as a council to modify the sector management program to be more sensitive to our ability to monitor, once again, their financial performance and stability.
Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaethel.
I have a question for Gene. We had problems. We struggled with goals and objectives in this because, to me, some of these are in conflict. I mean, goal number one and goal number two, to some degree, are exactly in the opposite. I mean, improving documentation of catch may increase costs, and then the next one is reduce cost of monitoring. Is that a problem moving forward if we have goals and objectives that may conflict with each other?
Well, I think it's just a matter of how literally you're interpreting the how they're written here, and if there appears to be a conflict, then the council ought to just take action to clear up that conflict. I mean, those two goals could be reconciled, you know, with qualifying language or something. But yeah, I mean, if it looks, if you're troubled by it, then I would suggest that there be at least some sort of clarification, recognition on the part of the council as to how you might resolve this potential conflict. And that can be explained too in the actual action that goes forward, as to how potentially conflicting goals are still reconcilable based on what the council decides to adopt.
Okay, so today, for example, we wouldn't have to go further. We could, in our rationale, provide written commentary on how we could make goals one and two, you know, work together.
Right. I think that works. I mean, it's just my opinion. But
okay. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience for any comments on this motion. Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Sixteen. Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries. Terry.
We're going to segue into the funding-related work that the committee did last week. And I've got a committee motion that passed Committee 902 to recommend that the council send a letter to NIMS to formally request 100% federal funding for groundfish mooring costs in fishing year 2013.
That's a committee motion. Doesn't require a second discussion. Jim.
Yeah, well, it's obvious after the presentation this morning that, and knowing where we're going with the Gulf of Maine card, that it's not going to be possible for the industry to afford to pay anything in 2013. So I just putting that on the record that, it's, you know, if we want to maintain a viable fleet of any kind, then they can't afford to pay for monitoring.
Anyone else on the council? George Darcy.
I have no objection to you writing a letter asking for it, but just for the record, I don't think there should be any expectation that there's going to be funding forthcoming beyond this fishing year, so far as I know it.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Is the goal to ask every year for 100%? And if that's the goal, why don't we just ask for it forever?
Jim, and then Doug.
Well, until we get the people off their knees that may be needed for a little while.
Doug.
Well, at least I'd like to point out, at least for FY13, at least the president's budget seemed to have an increase in funding for monitoring. So at least we're starting off in the right direction. Now, who knows what happens when it goes through Congress? At least we start off in the right direction.
I go to the audience. Any comments on this motion? Veto. Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Calamo, representing the United States Senator Scott Brown. In the second year of my position, I've never been asked or told what to say or do. As I left for this meeting, the suggestion, again, I wasn't told what to say or do. The suggestion was what you have on the board, to see if there's funding for the ground fish monitoring, because we may sit here and joke around about this cost that's been laden upon the fishing industry. But as Jim Odlin expressed, they are truly on their knees. I believe, with all the management tools that have been put in the box from time to time, and all the FMPs, that this here alone, given to the fishermen to absorb 100% of this expense, you would eliminate the lion's share of the fishing industry. I've never come to the New England Council and say, oh, you're going to put us out of business. I hate that, because I've listened to it for 40 years. You're going to put us out. They haven't gone out of business for this here would just about do it, because for the position we're in, you know, with the fish stocks in terrible condition, as we're hearing today and yesterday and from here on in for a while, and the new system that's at here to sectors, and it seems like that eliminated some of the fishing industry. I just very much was asked to make sure that I spoke on this, and here I am speaking that for some, I don't know where the funding will come from. I hear Doug saying that it's in the budget. I don't know. I don't get to sit down every day of my job to talk to Scott Brown. I do talk to the Chief of Staff from Washington. I talk to the directors in Boston. But I'm in the field, and that's my job. But one of my associates has asked me to make sure that I spoke on this. So I have spoken on it, and please adhere, or at least hear what I say. This is quite an ordeal to be absorbed by the fishing industry at this time. Thank you.
Fine.
Glenn Delaney, Northeast Seafood Coalition. I just wanted to rise in strong support for this motion and hope that the council will send the letter. I would note that in a conversation with agency leadership, While you won't find it in the NIMS blue book of their detailed breakdown of the president's budget proposal for FY13, because it doesn't go into this level of detail, we were advised that the agency assumed that 50% of the cost would be assumed by industry and 50% would be assumed by the agency in their FY13 budget detail breakdown. In addition, thanks to at least the requests of Senator Collins in particular, because she's on the Appropriations Committee, Senator Brown, Senator Kerry, and Senator Snow, all requested in the Senate Commerce, Justice, Science Appropriation Bill some language in the report that does speak to this very strongly as well. So it would be really important for both Congress and the agency to hear from the fishery managers that they see this as a high priority. So thank you, and I hope you'll pass this motion.
Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Libby from Port Clyde, ground fisherman. With fuel costs, it's hard enough, and fish regulations, obviously, we don't want to overfish, but it's a tough road. If we have to pay, say we down the road, we had to pay for, well, if in 2013, if I had to pay for 100% monitoring, I think it would be more than, the cost would be higher than we could bear. I think most of the small boat fishery would be pretty much done. So I support this motion. Hope we can get something to lower the cost in the future. We don't have it now. But I support it wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Gene.
I have to throw a wet blanket on this. This may fall under the anti-lobbying provision of federal regulations. So if it can be passed with the understanding that I'll consult with it applies to executive or legislative departments. So I, if it is passed, I'll work with council staff to see if there's any problems with it, if we can get around it. I don't think you should feel precluded from voting on it as long as we understand that. Let me just further check into this to see if there's a potential problem.
Thank you. Anybody else in the audience? Back to the council. Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Can anybody can quite recall what would be the all I really need is to know is an average number. How much a day are we talking about for monitoring? Does anybody know this? I mean, 500, 700, what are we talking about here?
What is the average cost per day of?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's not settled and there's a lot of variables, but, you know, let's say it was 700 a day, all right, just for example. My son was just out for 4 days. We would have been $2,100 in the hole. That's the reality of it.
Anyone else on the council? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Opposed? Abstention? 15-01, the motion carries. Terry?
I've got another committee motion which passed 10-01 to put into the considered and rejected column the fee model the cost recovery model, the lease credit model, and the incentives to pay model that were in the white paper.
Council motion, no second required. Terry.
Just some very brief rationale. The maker of the motion, provided that the first three options would not be possible unless the fishery was a LAP and that the fishery was not yet ready for the incentive to payment model as used on the West Coast.
Discussion by the council. Go to the audience. Any comments? Back to the council. Call the poll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that means quota set-asides and public-private partnerships are the two that will go forward for analysis.
So far, this is still work in progress.
Gene.
You know, after the committee meeting, someone clarified exactly what the lease credit model could entail in terms of, I think, grants or so forth. And so there may be a possibility that is still, and I could, this motion was in part taken based on my advice, and particularly with respect to the fee model, cost recovery model, which are clearly clearly not allowed. And I think I said when I gave the advice that lease credit model I appeared not to be allowed, but I wasn't that familiar with it. And there may be a possibility that if it's formulated in a certain way, I think it was in respect to grants, that it might be something that's legally viable. So I don't know if you want to put a caveat on that or take out the lease credit model until further review, just to keep your options open.
Terry?
You know, I defer to other members of the committee. I mean, we did have, as Gene said, this motion was as a result of his counsel, but I don't recollect there being any support for this particular option at the time, but if you know, we can bring it back and reject it again.
Jim.
Yeah, I was the maker of this particular motion, and maybe I didn't articulate it at the meeting, but it was not just only based on Gene's recommendation that I wanted to take that out. There were other rationale. I think we discussed it at the time, and one was we're not ready to develop it. We want to get this framework moving forward. So I think there was more rationale than just Gene's description. So I think it's appropriate to leave it in the motion.
Without any desire to change the wording, I will call a question on the motion. All those in favor so indicate. Sixteen. And I have to assume that's 0-0 unless we have somebody extra here. A motion carries. Terry.
Another committee motion, which passed 6-1-3, that a portion of the quota set aside for management uncertainty be allocated to individual sectors for them to auction sell between and or within sectors to defray at sea monitoring costs.
Committee motion. No second required. Discussion by the council.
David Pierce, then Jim Odlin.
Yeah, this obviously is a major departure from the way we have been doing things. That is, we would, if this motion passed, reduce the buffer between the ACL and the ABC and take that amount of fish that has been that's responsible for the reduction of the buffer and to then allocate that to the individual sectors for them to use to defray at-sea monitoring costs. Definitely a new way of doing business, bound to be a bit controversial, to say the least. And I think the nature of that controversy was reflected somewhat by the discussions we had at our committee meeting. I had made a motion earlier on that was specific to my desire to have the National Marine Fisheries Service oversee, control whatever fish might be auctioned up from the different stocks. Again, a brand new concept, untried. To me, that made the most sense. However, I did not prevail with my desire to have the service oversee this this new approach, work out the bugs, identify any problems that there might be, and then work to resolve those problems through federal oversight. But by this particular motion, we would be allocating fish to individual sectors for them to auction away. And obviously, the belief is that sectors will do that business well. And perhaps that is the case. But that's not my preference. So I will vote against this motion. I favored it at the committee meeting, but now I'm going to vote against it because I still believe that the service should have the oversight, should have the control, as we try this controversial approach.
Jim Odlin.
Yeah, just, you know, I'm sure everybody realizes it, but this is not saying we're going to do it. It says we're going to develop an option, and work forward to this to see how it would look under this kind of framework. So I just, you know, thought it should be stated that this is, we're not adopting this. For sure, we're just asking the PDT to develop something. And I'd just like to point out to Dr. Pierce's idea was told to us that because we're not an LAPP, we can't do that other option. And that is have National Marine Fisheries Service tax us. So, or do the auction. So that was part of the rationale for going in this direction.
Anyone else on the council? Doug Grout.
Yeah, I'd like to ask, somewhere in here I was reading there was benefits, some analysis of something like this that was done by the PDT. I was, as to the pros and cons of it, I was wondering if we could get some kind of a review or some kind of review of this given to the council.
You can, but someone's going to have to bring me a copy because I don't have it in my packet, I don't think. I have the committee packet. Okay, it's in the PDT report from March 23rd. And this was a preliminary analysis because actually the committee made this motion after the PDT did this preliminary analysis. And so this wasn't supposed to be the be-all, end-all. And the PDT will certainly look at it again if this passes. And so the original idea before we, you know, there's sort of the one issue of whether it's allocated to individual sectors. But what the PDT looked at was the concept in general of whether management uncertainty could be auctioned off to raise funds for monitoring and, you know, whether the buffer that's associated with the monitoring. And so there's a couple different issues here, and they're all laid out in bullet points, and then we ran some numbers to show how much fish it might convert to with the set-aside and how much revenue that might lead to, but again, very preliminary. So I can go through the bullets about the discussion points briefly that were the sort of the first things at a quick glance that came to the mind of the PDT. The first is the sort of logical issue that the amount of fish is set aside and not expected to be caught, and it converts the fish that aren't expected to be caught into fish that are expected to be caught. And so it reduces the size of the buffer between the ABC and the ACL. So that's one thing that the PDT would need to look at. The next is that, this is sort of a long paragraph, but that if the proceeds fund additional FC monitoring effort, then that could justify reducing the size of the buffer. But the buffer's there for a reason, and it's sort of the concept that the buffer, which is about 5% now for various groundfish stocks, is there because of management uncertainty in the presence of the current monitoring program that we have. So unless you are actually increasing the monitoring coverage or the whatever your data you are getting out of the monitoring program that you knew you were getting more certainty out of that, it doesn't really make sense logically to reduce the buffer. So it might make more sense to talk about this sort of concept as a way to increase monitoring above the current levels. But you can't, you know, if you reduce the uncertainty just to bring the monitoring back, that's sort of a logical problem there because the uncertainty is there for another reason to begin with. So another problem is that if the management uncertainty buffer is too large, then again, this is sort of the similar idea, but if the buffer is too large, then sure, you can auction off the extra uncertainty that's in there. We don't know until the end of the fishing year whether the buffer was too big or whether it was too small. And so to auction it off in advance and to use the revenues, you might be risking approaching your catch limit there. And the management uncertainty buffer may be smaller than needed. We've got these, you know, sort of changing stock assessments and reductions in several ABCs because of what's going on with the stock assessments. And so it's possible that there's a problem with the buffer here, either with the scientific uncertainty or the management uncertainty. And so we may want to think twice before thinking about reducing it for that reason. Another potential problem with the auction concept is that it may not attract participants. That, you know, maybe it'll raise revenue, but only if you're making enough revenue to account for the uncertainty, and only if you have enough fish available that people want to buy it. And you have a problem of which stocks you're selling. Are you going to sell them as a package? I mean, there's some sort of conceptual issues here that, again, the PDT can look at more, but it is fairly complex. And sort of associated with that is the question of who will run the auction. In this motion, it said that it was just an extra amount given to the sectors, and the sectors can figure it out. But somehow there would have to be some sort of oversight to know what was happening with the uncertainty buffer in relation to this extra allocation of fish. And then, like I said, it goes through some of the potential revenues if the current uncertainty levels were auctioned off. And then, finally, an advantage to an auction is that it would provide additional information on the value of waste fish because it could be pretty easily tracked where that what money was being received for those fish that were auctioned off.
Does that answer your question?
Well, the one question I have of the committee and the maker of the motion is, was the intent of this to be additional monitoring on top of what we've already have, or was it supposed to defray the cost of the existing monitoring?
My understanding was it was to defray the cost, not for additional. Terry, do you?
That's correct.
Tom Dempsey?
To that point, and I think Annie raises a good argument. We can't, the management uncertainty buffer is there for a reason, and we can't reduce or eliminate it without improving our certainty in our estimates of catch. But I think we need to get away from a false raise or a false assumption that we're working with a static system that we just ramp up or ramp down. A big part of this framework is adjusting and revising how we approach monitoring so that we can do more with less and so that we can reallocate some of those resources and use different tools so we can actually get this information that will allow us to have increased certainty without just dialing up the coverage levels of our existing fleet. I think that's the direction that we're moving towards. I do really think that we need more certainty in order to justify a reduction in the management buffer that would allow something like this to be feasible. And I think Annie raises some of the issues that we're going to have to deal with along with the PDT as we move forward with this. But in my mind, I think we collectively need to get beyond imagining that we're stuck with this system and we can either ratchet it up or ratchet it down to affect the cost or the coverage and precision.
Jim Ogden.
I guess maybe it's me that's a little confused on management uncertainty. I mean, I vision management uncertainty as we were entering into a new realm of management and we were uncertain that we were going to be able to control the catch. So we put in a buffer. Our experience now after 2 years almost of operation is that we are controlling our catch to within the prescribed numbers that are given to us by our SSC, and we're doing very well at that. Now, if there's other uncertainty that's scientific or whatever, that's dealt with somewhere else. This is management uncertainty that we're talking about. So maybe I have a simple definition of management uncertainty in my mind, but that's to me what it is. And we're just saying now that we've had experience here, we know maybe we don't need 5%. Maybe we can get by with 3%. And if we can get by with 3%, let's use 2 of it to defray some of the cost of monitoring. I don't know. Thank you.
George Darcy.
Is that the correct motion? Maybe I'm confused, but looking at document number 2 here, it looked to me like this motion had failed, and the motion that actually passed was to recommend that the PDT analyze this? Or am I confused? On page 3 of document number 2?
You're correct, George. Should read to recommend that the PDT analyze having a portion of the quota set aside for management uncertainty be allocated. That the PDT analyze having a portion of quota set aside from to individual sectors. Okay, you got it.
Thank you, George. Okay, George again.
So if I may comment on this motion. I don't have any problem having this further analyzed because I think, you know, we do have to look at creative solutions to solving this problem. I continue, my staff continues to have some concerns about making sure that any reduction in that buffer is compensated for by greater certainty. But as far as going forward with analysis, that's okay with us.
Dave Gatel, then Mark Gibson.
You know, my question's for Gene. On the motion that failed, the last sentence says there was also a possibility that this motion would trigger an amendment. And I don't really see the motion that passed as being any materially different than the one that failed. So does the same statement apply? And if so, have you clarified your thoughts on whether or not this would trigger an amendment?
Yeah, it's mentioned, I think, in a discussion under the next on the motion that passed, and it says that it would depend on exactly what's included in the measure. So I don't have any further guidance to give based just on how far this motion goes, which is just to analyze this possibility. So if something comes out, if the analysis reveals specific measures that are being proposed that would trigger an amendment, then I think I can give an opinion. But I haven't done any further look beyond because of the sort of general nature of the motion at this time.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm baffled as to where these motions come from. I mean, every time Dr. Rago comes here, we have disappearing fish. Our projections don't pan out. They're too optimistic. We need more uncertainty buffers. I heard him say that under those circumstances, if we're going to carve away a piece of it and create some kind of a slush fund. Maybe it's late in the day for me, but I'm opposed to this.
Anyone else on the council? Mark.
I agree with Mark. I just think if you want to set aside money for at-sea observing, set aside a certain slice and call it that. I mean, from the ACL, don't take a piece of the management uncertainty because you don't think you need it. I mean, create a monitoring set aside and reduce the management uncertainty if you think that's allowable. But this is just doesn't seem as transparent to me as it should be.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Seems like about a year ago we weren't so worried about management uncertainty. Everything seemed to be on track, and then we got hammered with the COD assessment and more of them coming along. There's been a lot of talk about improving certainty. We have to have the monitoring. The fleet can't afford it. We've got to find the money somewhere. I think this is a good way to raise some money to do it and keep the fleet fishing. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the audience. Tina, then Aaron.
Tina Jackson, American Alliance of Fishermen. I don't know too often that Mark and I actually agree on anything, but and I understand the need for the fleet to defray the cost for at-sea monitoring because obviously it's a very big issue. But considering what was just said, some of the cons to this, pros and cons to this issue, I think that eventually, if there is an overage, if there is not a large enough buffer, and there is an overage on the stock, it eventually is going to hurt the fishermen. I would have to say, am I right that if there is some type of overage, that it would come out of the allocation for the fleet?
Well, it depends. I mean, if there's an overage in the sector, then the sector stops fishing, or if they approach the ACL.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure what kind of overage you mean.
Well, an overage of what was purchased. Do you know what I mean? If the buffer's not large enough, like if they're talking about having the uncertainty at a larger level.
Right. So if it's an overage of what's allocated to the sectors, then the sector shuts down. If you're talking about just going over what's biologically okay.
Never mind. I'm not putting it in the right form, but that's okay. I don't think auctioning is actually the answer. I mean, and let the government pay for it. I think I've said that before at this moment. Let them pay for it. I mean, they find money for just about everything that they need for their little niches here and there. Let them deal with it. This is their little agenda. They wanted to create this brand-new business of at-sea monitoring. I mean, they valiantly waste money on a regular basis, and I think GSA comes to my mind first and foremost. I mean, they find money for things that they want to find money for, and I think that this is extremely important that the government take a look inside its pockets and defray the costs on their own without having to touch any of the stocks and uncertainty that's there for a reason. I think some of the questions as to who's going to get it, who's going to be able to purchase it, it's certainly not going to be the person who doesn't have capital. It's going to be the people who already have large pockets themselves, and then I think that's going to cause a problem. Down the line, it's going to give people more of an opportunity to basically own more. So I would have to say that while I appreciate the intention of this to help the fleet, I think it's an actual hindrance in the long run. So.
Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center in the Northeast Coastal Community Sector. I support the idea of a monitoring set-aside, though I'm concerned about reducing the management uncertainty buffer given the conversation this morning about Gulf of Maine haddock and about some of the other stocks as well. And I think that Mark raised some good points and others here as well. So whether it's management uncertainty, whether it's scientific uncertainty, there obviously is a lot of risk, and there's reason for uncertainty buffers. And I think that this council has to take a pretty serious look at that before you can consider cutting into any uncertainty buffer and passing the straight face test on that. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to point out what George picked up on. The original motion was to recommend that a portion of the set-aside be used, be allocated to the sectors for this purpose. That motion failed miserably. One vote for, six against, three abstentions. The question that was argued about on that first motion was whether having this quota set aside for a portion of the quota taken out of management uncertainty would in fact reduce that uncertainty and give a buffer, or reducing uncertainty to the point where you could take a little portion of it. The idea was not to take the entire management uncertainty buffer and use it to fund the program. The point was to incentivize having a reduction in that uncertainty. That's what it was for. But we didn't know how to engineer that, because it's never been done before. So the idea was simply to recommend that the PDT analyze. That's what the second motion said. The first one failed. Actually instituting the program failed. And nobody wanted to do it because we didn't know whether it would work. This is an analysis to see if having a portion, and it would be a small portion, of the quota set aside for management uncertainty be allocated, and only in the case, in the event, that it was shown that it would reduce the uncertainty and it would be allocated by the amount that it would reduce. That was the idea behind it. It's not clear from the motion, because the motion is simple and straightforward without all of these encumbrances. But that was the idea behind it, and that's why it passed on the second time around. And, in fact, it carried 613. So the idea is just to look at the concept. It's not to put it into effect. Thank you.
Okay, right at the moment I have Jim Odlin, Doug Grout, Frank Blount, and Rodney Ablin.
I think people need to keep in mind a little bit what's trying to be attempted here. One of the things that is trying to be attempted here is to try to find a way to share the cost of monitoring that we are going to pick up at some point. I don't know when. The taxpayer is not going to continuously give money to this industry. So at some point we're going to be picking up monitoring, or some portion of monitoring. And the idea of something like this is it spreads the cost of the monitoring throughout the fleet, all size vessels. So if you're worried about fleet diversity, this is the type of thing you're going to have to do. Otherwise, each individual is going to get a bill for their monitoring, irregardless of their size of boat, how they fish, or anything. So it's just a simple attempt to try to share that across the fleet. And I think people are forgetting that.
Doug Grout.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. After hearing the discussion here, I certainly am feeling supportive of this concept. However, the analysis that I would like to hear, I would like to see, I need a little bit more there's some analysis I'd like to see is comparing the difference between whether this set-aside is taken out of the area, the section for management uncertainty, and then also have an analysis to see if it's taken out of actually the ACL, because I think the whole concept is the right idea. It's just where we take it out of, and I'd like to have that piece of information before we make a decision whether we're going to include this or not in there. So I have a motion to amend. And the motion to amend will state that the PDT analyze having a portion of I got to wait until I get that back up there. Okay. That the PDT analyze having a portion of
of quota set aside to be allocated. So you're going to essentially get rid of for management uncertainty. Be allocated to individual sectors for them to be auctioned off, sold with or within sectors to defray the cost. And they go on to say this analysis will include a discussion and comparison of the impacts of having the portion of the quota come from one, the portion of the set aside, the portion set aside for management uncertainty, and two, a portion of the ACL.
You're only one line away from the Pierce rule.
But I was very careful to keep within the new rule. You know.
Is there a second to this motion? Dave Gaethel? Okay. What's that? Okay, I'll put you on the list. I've got Frank, then Rodney, then Jim, then Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I like this a little better. I was concerned, as everybody else is, and Mark hit it, with the uncertainty, but I think we do have the scientific uncertainty, which is built in to begin with, and that seems to be where we're having most of the trouble. I think, as Jimmy said it, it's not the management uncertainty. We seem to be hitting our targets or way below our targets, and the problem we're having is not the measures we're putting in, it's the scientific side. So I kind of like this one a little bit better. I'll be supporting it.
Rodney. Jim.
Yeah, I think just to further clarify how we got here in the discussion is that the idea that NIMS could do it became known that we can't because we didn't have an LEPP, so we tried to figure out a way or attempting to figure out a way to do it in this framework by utilizing the ACE structure that we have where the sectors get the ACE. And so that's kind of the thinking that went into that this goes to the sectors. And they get to utilize it. That way we can avoid a lot. We hope to be able to avoid a lot of that other stuff. That was the attempt.
Terry Stockwell.
Not that I don't support your the motion, Doug, but on page 14 of the white paper is quota set asides, which is one of the few funding mechanisms that the committee chose to retain in the document. And this would add further clarity towards the development of that option, but would completely preclude the analysis of the previous motion.
I guess I don't understand that, because why I said to do a comparison and analysis of if the quota came out of the portion set aside for management uncertainty. So I'm trying to get that analysis. But I'm also trying to get the analysis of comparing between taking it out of as a set aside or taking it out of management uncertainty. I'm trying to get both.
Okay. Thank you.
Mark?
I just want to clarify from Doug, in the third line from the bottom where you have the word impacts, with respect to looking at the impacts as they relate to the portion set aside for management uncertainty, you're kind of implying looking at the risk there, right?
Not this. That could be one of the things it's looking at, yes. I'm using impacts as a very broad term.
Okay, Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two things, actually, that need to be straightened out. I think you should eliminate the words the impacts of, so it would read, it will include having a discussion and comparison of having, I'm sorry, will include a discussion and comparison of having the portion of the quota come from one, and then the word and should be changed to or, and then I think you've got it.
I'll agree with that, those friendly amendments.
Is the seconder agree with that? Okay. Dave Gaethel.
I voted against the original motion at the committee, and I was planning to vote against it here as well. This is, I think, an improvement, but I'm still, my concern at the committee, I'll tell you what my concern is. My concern at the committee was that it wasn't implicit in the discussion that when we analyzed this, if the government or some private entity outside the sector's control, that they could set the terms and conditions of the auction. And because we were ruled that that couldn't happen, if we turn this over to the sectors, first of all, I don't know if the fish will be allocated evenly, proportionally, based on PSC. What terms and conditions will apply to the auction? I mean, I'm glad that everybody trusts us, but I don't. We could have insider trading here, collusion. You know, once it's out of the hands of somebody overseeing it, there's no reason for everybody not to get together and say, well, I think we should all bid 10 cents a pound on Gulf of Maine cod, knowing that Gulf of Maine cod may be worth $2. How are you going to stop it? So if the analysis implicit in this motion is to analyze all these issues, and I can give you two or three pages more if you'd like, then I'll probably vote for it. But if it's strictly to analyze what it says on the board, then I'm still going to vote against it, because I think this should be run, quite frankly, if we're going to have an auction, it should be run by somebody other than the sectors, and I want to know how the fish is going to be allocated amongst the individual sectors. There's just too many unanswered questions here.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think I have a little bit different view of it. I know it says auction and sale in there, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. We're adding some value to the sector. The sector is a business. It's run by a lot of partners. And what I see happening, or potentially happening, is at the end or the beginning of the year or whatever, the sector is going to get a bill for the monitoring costs. The sector will have to say, all right, well, we're taking out a certain percentage out of everybody's catch right now to administer the sector. We're adding in monitoring costs. You add in this value of the fish to help defray some of that. How they divide it up really doesn't matter. The bill is going to go back to the fishermen, but it's going to be run through the business, which is the partnership of the sector. That's my view of it, a way that it could work and take away some of these concerns. Thank you.
Anyone who hasn't spoken on this? You're fooling me. Doug.
I just wanted to respond to my seconder's question. Yeah, that was one of the first questions that came to mind, was how this was going to be allocated between the sectors. And I hope as we move forward, if we move forward with this, there'll be a variety of options on how this is allocated in the framework that will be analyzed. Whether it's done now or somewhere in the development of the framework, it clearly needs to be done before I can vote one way or the other on it.
Dave Preble.
I'll be quick. Doug was exactly right. That was the direction that the conversation went. I was part of that conversation. I remember it very distinctly. We did not know how it would be structured. We argued for a while over it should be auction/sell, auction or sell, how we would set that up, and decided that that was something that needed to be analyzed, and Glenn Libby's point is quite valid as well. This is just one way for the businesses to work out how to pay for what's going to be a devastating cost. And it's not going to take care of all of it, but perhaps by looking down this pathway and analyzing it, we can find something that can help out. That's what it was. That was the gist of the whole discussion.
I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Eleven in favor. Opposed? Four opposed. Abstention? 11-4-1. The motion carries. Terry. Yes, you're quite right. Now we're back on the main motion as amended. Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Twelve in favor. Opposed. Two, three opposed. Abstention. One. 12-3-1. The motion carries. So, thank you, Terry.
Got a rather long committee motion here. The past 9-0-2. And I'll read it. Do you want me to read it in the record? Probably because people in the back can't see it. It's to recommend that the council adopt the following distinction between those aspects of the groundfish monitoring program which the fishing industry could be required to support partially or entirely, and those programmatic costs that will continue to be funded permanently and entirely by the National Marine Fisheries Service. Specifically, the industry shall only be responsible for contributing to the funding for direct at-sea monitor ASM costs, specifically the daily salary of the at-sea monitor. Costs of the ASM and monitoring program shall continue to be supported entirely by NIMPS. These program elements and activities would include, but are not exclusive to, briefings, debriefings, training and certification costs, sampling, design and development, data storage, management and security, data quality assurance and control, administrative costs, maintenance of monitoring equipment, ASM recruitment benefits, insurance and taxes, logistical costs associated with ASM deployment, and ASM travel and lodging.
Terry, was that part of the document number 2, the groundfish report, or?
It was in the previous committee meeting. Be on page 5 of the March 29th summary.
On page 6.
Thanks, Annie. It was a motion to amend as perfected. Page 6.
Has everybody got that? That's document number 1, page 6. I just want to give everybody just a couple of minutes to read it, because I was thinking of ruling it out of order because it violated the Pierce rule, but it's a committee motion, so I may have to make an exception.
It came from Massachusetts.
Tom Dempsey.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to sort of set the context for this motion, and I do apologize for it, but it is a list. So this was based on some of these distinctions were drawn from other fisheries nationally that require some fraction of their monitoring costs to be borne by the industry. It's very important that we clearly identify what we mean when we say that the industry is going to pick up some fraction of the monitoring cost and create a clear delineation in terms of what costs we expect the industry to pick up and what costs we anticipate and support the National Marine Fisheries Service funding in full in perpetuity. And I think this is a good start to that. This was amended during the discussion at the committee level and actually moved more onto the NIMF side of the ledger. But I think we got to a good place, and I think this belongs in the framework and will go a long way towards creating some stability in terms of setting expectations about funding long term.
Anyone else on the council? Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the issues and concerns are clearly articulated, and we we of course share the broader concerns about how these costs are going to be absorbed. But the point that I really want to make is that we have little confidence that appropriated funds are going to become available to support this, to support these activities in the long term. And my expectation is that a letter like this would likely go, if it comes to the region, it would go on to headquarters, and the response would be at best equivocal, but certainly would not result in any commitment back from the agency.
Anyone else on the council? Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My thought is if we don't ask for it, they'll think we think everything's fine and not even try. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the audience. Any comments on this motion from the audience? Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Libby from Port Clyde. Earlier I said that we couldn't afford 100%, and if we don't do something like this, like my brother just said, probably everyone will think things fine and we'll end up with 100% but of the cost. But this is a step in the right direction. I don't see what's wrong with making an ask. I support this motion. And under the thought that it is an ask, we don't have to have it. They could say no. Then we can ask again, I guess. Thanks.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council, Laura.
I just wanted to make one point as an industry person. Foley Fish doesn't pay the green shirts to come inspect us, and we don't pay the FDA to come check our shellfish cooler. So I do think that it is interesting that the fishing industry is expected to pay for their own policing when the rest of the industry gets those little surprise visits without any cost to themselves, so long as they're not fined, which fortunately we have not been, but it does seem that perhaps President Obama and his jobs initiative might think about creating a monitoring division of either the green shirts or the FDA instead of putting this burden on the fishermen. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to start with Frank, Mary Beth, Dave.
2 points, and I think I got to change industries because, unfortunately, I do pay for the Coast Guard to do inspections and FCC and a few others. But the Gene, I'm just wondering if this isn't any different than what we did this morning. Well, I think not even this morning, just a couple hours ago when you said we're lobbying. Is this lobbying or is this a little bit different because it's something that's already done?
Whining.
Yeah, I was just told we're whining. We're not lobbying, so...
I'll take a look at this one too to see. I mean, it's not
It's sort of setting out principles, I guess, more than, although I don't know, I'd have to take a look at this one too, but, you know, I say go ahead and vote on it the way you want to, and we'll look at it after the fact.
Mayor Gott.
Yeah, I would just point out that this is an example of cost sharing that is used in other regions in the country, and this could be lifted right directly out of the, restructured observer program in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. The analysis in the document says exactly this. So this is not something new and unheard of. And I'll leave it at that.
Dave Gazel.
Okay, I just want to call people's attention to the fact that we had two committee meetings, and this is from our first committee meeting. Subsequent to that, if you look in the April 18th meeting summary on page 4 and 5, we had a briefing from Amy Van Atten on the actual costs here. So in hindsight, looking back, we actually did a pretty good job of the division of labor. But I did want people to know that we did receive a briefing on actual costs, and some of these are real eye-openers. In my opinion. So I urge you to support the motion.
Anyone against the motion? I'm going to call a question. All those in favor, so indicate. One, 14 in favor, opposed, abstention, 1. 14-01, the motion carries. Terry.
I've got one last committee motion related to funding that passed 6-2-3. It's to develop an option in the next appropriate action for 100% dockside monitoring coverage that is paid for by the dealer.
That's a committee motion, no second required, discussion. Dave Gaethel.
Well, I adamantly oppose this at the committee level. I'm going to urge you all to oppose it here. It all comes out of the fish hold. I don't care who you collect the money from. We've got the enforcement committee report. Dockside monitors have not proved to have any value whatsoever. The joint enforcement agreements are handling the job just fine. That's already paid for. I would suggest you leave it there. If you want to send a letter specifically requesting that the JEA be tasked, throughout the range to step up dockside monitoring or something, I have no opposition to that. But, having watched these folks in action for a while, I saw absolutely nothing to be gained from this except more cost. And putting the cost onto the dealer, the bigger dealers, like I said, they just take a penny or two off your check. But if you're a small person and you're doing, farm fresh things like that, basically the boat's a dealer and they're selling small quantities of fish, you're going to pay for a dockside monitor to go to an outport. It's not Gloucester or someplace that, where they can monitor a whole bunch of boats. You've put those people right out of existence. I mean, they can't do that anymore because they are going to get a bill that exceeds the value of the fish that they're going to be unloading for a guy to stand there and watch them take them out of the boat and sell them I've said it at the committee, there's a line at my dock of people. There's the joint enforcement agreement, that's fishing game. There's uniform NOAA cops. There's undercover NOAA cops. The police drive down once in a while now because they want to know what all the uniforms are on the dock. They're afraid they're missing something. How many people do you need to watch one fish come out of the boat, folks? Honestly, I urge you to defeat this. Thank you.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think that we ought to, push to find out what percent of the landings are monitored by enforcement. I think that's key in your deliberation about who's going to pay for dockside monitoring. is what percent of the landings are monitored by enforcement?
Anyone in favor of this motion? Jim?
Yes, I'm in favor of this motion. We hear a lot about unrecorded catch maybe being a problem. We need to put that to bed. There's nothing to prevent somebody from unloading fish right now somewhere on a dock, putting it in a pickup truck and sending it up the street. It's called black market fish. Most catcher systems that I know about have dockside monitoring. And if you don't, then you end up with black market fish, which hurts not just the resource, it hurts the other people that are trying to do it legally because it's usually on the market cheaper. And if we don't do this, you will be back here looking at finding a way to get around black market fish. We had black market fish when we had days at sea and quotas. You know, people were running over and they run them up the dock. So this is, I think, a necessary evil in catchers. The idea of the system we had before, did not work. It didn't work because it was only 50% random. So if somebody didn't have a monitor, there was nothing to prevent them from unloading fish at this dock and then recording it and then going over to the next dock and running it up the dock. If it's 100%, they don't have to go in the fish hole. All they have to do is be there when you unload. The act of unloading without a monitor would be a violation. Federal agents can ride up and down the docks and enforce it. They can enforce it from a camera from some remote location. So if you don't go down this road, we will have black market fish.
Against the motion. Doug.
And I think that since this is an enforcement issue, that it should be something that should be handled with enforcement, because you can have black market fish with these contractors that they have coming out and doing the dockside monitoring.
I think support.
We're only kidding yourselves.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. One of the things we talked about was video monitoring on the boats as a way to reduce cost. And it's pretty clear that there were some limitations to it. They couldn't really count the fish, couldn't tell how many were on deck. That, in my mind, tells me that you're going to have to count them sometime. That's when you unload. So it seems like if we're going to try to save money with video monitoring, we're going to have some kind of dockside program in place.
Okay. Against? Rodney.
Yeah, right now I'm against this because it all comes down right to the crew member. I mean, it's going to be taken out. It's an added expense to the crew member. I mean, that's what we have enforcement agents for. Let them go do their jobs. I mean, why should we pay for somebody to monitor to do somebody else's job? Somebody breaks into Walgreens, we put a monitor on their leg. We don't pay for it. They don't pay for it. The system pays for it. So right now I'm against this. Thank you.
In support? Tom?
I support this. What we're asking here is to fully develop an alternative, not now, but in a subsequent action. We heard already from council that we can't do it in this framework, that it would require scoping and full process. We've talked about this, I think it was a year and a half ago at this point. There was some interest then, also some of the concerns and issues people have raised. But I think it's there are concerns and issues about effectively monitoring how many fish are coming out, and this could be a tool to help us get there. There are questions and concerns involved, and we'd have to flesh it out. We'd have to analyze it and look at those things. But I do think it's something that we should consider, and I think in the next available action, it's appropriate to do so.
Go to the audience in support of the motion. Rich.
Rich Canastra with Base New England. I'm in support of the motion, but there should be something additional to the motion, if I can suggest it, that at sea vessels should have 100% full retention of what you catch. In return, that dealer, speaking for myself, would pay for 100% dock side monitoring. As far as the cost at sea monitoring would be eliminated. And you can get much more of what's being landed and you still have your enforcement out at sea, but 100, you'll get more out of what's being landed, 100% full retention in the assessments, as far as no black market for fish, as Jimmy says. I know, Paul, you asked the question about the Green Police and the Fed agents. I have about 75% coverage at my facility. They camp there, and I welcome it. I really do welcome it. But at my facility, there's about 75% coverage of what's being unloaded. But I would ask of full retention included in this motion. Thanks.
Against the motion? Anybody in the audience? Can't see. John?
Good afternoon, almost evening. John Whiteside, representing at this time Zeus Packing and as well as a number of other dealers, processors, direct offloaders who are not in the room at this time. I would agree with Dave Guthel and Rodney Avila and oppose the motion, and both on procedural and substantive grounds. In reviewing the Oversight Committee's notes, I would agree with NOAA General Counsel that the motion is not appropriate for a framework since it would shift the financial burden from one party to another that was not previously commented. And I'm quoting from the notes of the meeting. This is a new regulatory compliance cost that is being shifted onto the dealer, offloader, and processors. At that point, if they're going to hold the line to keep their prices constant with their buyers, they're going to have to pay less from the boats. So this is just shifting it back onto the people that you're, I think, intending to help here. It's not going to be coming back out of them. We have to hold the line on our cost of goods sold, and there's no other alternative that we would have. We would suggest the better alternatives are the two remaining that I believe are still before the PDT, and ask that you vote against this. Thank you.
Going to take one more for, one more against, and then we're going to bring it back, because this is still just a future action. It's not a final one. BW, for or against?
Yes.
Okay. Is there somebody else who's for? Okay, BW, you got last shot at.
Vito Calamo from United States Senator Scott Brown's office. I heard three fishermen talk, David Gaethel, Jimmy Odlin, and Rodney Avila. Two of them, port and starboard, absolutely know it's going to come out of the hull of the fishermen. Absolutely know it's going to be another burden for the fishermen. It always comes out of the hole of the fishermen. It comes from the deckhands. There's no way. So if you have this one here doing that and that one doing, it's still going to come down to the fishermen paying for it. Dockside monitoring. I just heard my friend from New Bedford says he has 75% dockside monitoring. He isn't paying for it. They do it already. In Gloucester, Massachusetts, under our auction, Northeast Seafood auction, they were there every day. When I was on the New England Council, I would go there in my dungarees and sweatshirt and watch them perform. I was appalled at what they did. But I'm getting off a little, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, they measured fish 1/8 of an inch off dockside monitor. They fined them. 7 pounds over on a trip, they find them. They were dockside monitors. They brought a $330,000 cabin cruiser for themselves. They were dockside monitoring. Mr. Chairman, we have a multitude of police, as David Gaethel had said, who do dockside monitoring in their way. I don't know how far we're going to go and involve more expense when we're trying to curtail expense. Maybe somebody didn't listen to me when I spoke earlier, and my wife says I speak loud enough. But we need, as a whole, to keep the industry going for all of our jobs and for all of the shoreside facilities. We don't need any more incurred expenses. We need to work together, as I said now, and I say later. Keep working together. This is going in the wrong direction, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Back to the council. Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As chair of the committee, the comments that I heard were that the intent of this motion were to be to go exactly where Richie Canasta was pointing out. It was to provide an incentive for less cost to the fishermen by decreasing the cost of the onboard observers and coupling together with either an electronic monitoring program or a dockside monitoring program that would then be directly related to an incorporation of a consideration of maximized retention and future action. I think just for clarification, to repeat your clarification, this is in the next action, not considered in this monitoring framework.
I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. Eight opposed. Seven. Abstention. One. The motion carries. Terry.
That concludes the committee's motions on funding.
Did we have another presentation?
I think Sally has a comment, I think, related to it, and then the next issue is an update on the ABC framework.
Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just before we move off of monitoring, I just wanted to make sure that some of the measures that we talked about in bits and pieces are, in fact, included in the PDT's further development of alternatives to improve the monitoring system for sectors. From staff, it would be helpful just to be clear that there's going to be further development of electronic monitoring alternatives. Alternatives that would require or allow full retention of managed species. Along with that, the potential elimination of minimum fish sizes. And then we just talked about the establishment of dockside monitoring, but also along with that, a video auditing system to verify catch. So I just want to make sure that all those things, we've talked about them over the course of two committee meetings, some of them today, just wanted to make sure those are a part of the ongoing development of alternatives for monitoring.
Did you have a comment on that, Amy? Or?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the intent of the white paper is to show what we're, you know, with the outline we have of the white paper there is to show what we're planning on looking at. And the reason we keep giving it to the committee is if there's any guidance of something that's not in there. That we'd like to hear it, but I just jotted down everything Sally said, and that's all in there. So, but as we go forward, again, the white paper will reflect what we'll be analyzing.
Does that answer your question, Terry?
I'm going to turn it over to Tom.
Dave?
Well, to the previous motion, is there going to be a status quo in here that would be the dockside monitoring is eliminated, that will be analyzed? I mean, I know it returns in 2013 without a motion, but right now it's suspended.
The committee has not put anything in the document yet on what to do with dioxide monitoring other than this motion. So there's nothing in the document. Dioxide monitoring returns, I think, at the 20% level, 20% of trips at industry cost in 2013, according to the regulations. So absent any action, that's what would happen.
Okay, well, and I'd like to make a motion to analyze an option to permanently eliminate the dioxide monitoring program.
Second, Doug Grout. Discussion.
Well, I think we already had the discussion, yeah. But for all the reasons I listed, if we don't at least analyze the option and have some discussion with enforcement about the fact that the joint enforcement agreement can handily take care of this issue, we'll never get the analysis we need. So I think, at least to be fair, if we're going to analyze the option of having it returned, we ought to analyze the option of having it eliminated.
Tom.
Two things. One is we did this year, and I'm not sure if maybe we could have a conversation and just remind people how we essentially eliminated that option for 2012. And then for me, looking at this, I'd like to see this discussed in terms of the requirement, because I know there are sectors who are looking to put operations plans together in terms of accountability to their ACE that rely on a dioxide monitoring component. I think what we're trying to do here is figure out how we get away from the 20% requirement or how to address that. But I don't want the tool to go away. I think it's been poorly implemented, well-intentioned, but probably poorly implemented. I don't think, as it exists, we've gotten out of it what people wanted to. So I have no problem, I think, with the intent, but I think what we're trying to get at is the requirement, not the option. And I would like to see the option for a well-designed dioxide monitoring program to be implemented through the operations of a plan of a sector, if that's how they wanted to track their ACE and comply.
If Dave, you put eliminate the mandatory dioxide monitoring program.
That's fine. I mean, if sectors want to have them on their own, I have no problem with that at all. I don't want to be saddled with it. It's on a personal basis.
Without major objection, I'm going to move along to the vote, see if we can get this wrapped up. We still got one more presentation under ground fish, and we're running out of time. Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. Eleven in favor. Opposed? Three opposed. Abstention? Two. The motion carries. Tom.
I don't actually have an actual presentation, but I'll give a quick overview of a comment that's on page 5 of a discussion that I think is on page 5 of the April 18th Ground Fish Committee meeting. There were some issues last November that were left hanging with respect to the scallop fishery and the ground fish fishery, and I think there were four. And some of them were included in the scallop priorities discussion that happened at the first part of the November meeting. Some of them were not, because they came up under ground fish on the third day of the meeting, so they didn't show up under priorities. So there are basically four issues, as I recall. Two of them related to the sub-ACLs for whether we should have a sub-ACL for the scallop fishery for southern windowpane flounder and southern New England mid-Atlantic winter flounder. A third one related to whether there should be an action where we modify the dates for access to the scallop fishing areas. And the fourth one right now slips my mind. So the Ground Fish Committee felt that they didn't have, they wanted to go to the scallop committee and find out which one of those issues they considered most important. And so we asked the scallop committee, which of the four do you think are the most important? The scallop committee came back and said they would like to try and address the issue of when they're allowed access to the scallop access areas on George's Bank in a joint action that would take place this year. Terry's going to have a ground fish committee motion which addresses that. The idea that would be that there would be some sort of joint action. We would probably try and piggyback it on the scallop framework that they're currently working on. There is some ongoing research that's taking place to try and identify yellowtail bycatch. We are, at the staff, trying to make arrangements to get the research report in time so the research steering committee can review it so we can incorporate it. I'm going to, since I have a mic, I'm going to note that this is somewhat problematic from the groundfish PDT's point of view. As someone has pointed out, we have now have more things above the line than we had above and below the line in November for groundfish. But this is an important issue, and the groundfish committee does have a motion that's recommended.
Committee motion that passed 8-1-1. The groundfish committee recommends the council include as a priority starting a joint action with the scallop committee to modify the dates for access to the scallop fishery access areas.
Committee motion doesn't require a second. Discussion. Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Is there anybody against this motion in the audience? Back to the council. The Terry, the intent of this, just to clarify in my mind, is to get this priority going right away, to change priorities, or essentially get it by the time we do priorities for this year?
I'm going to defer to the chair of the scallop committee.
We did
ask for their recommendation of the four, as Tom said, the four issues that were important to them, which one was their highest priority. And this one rose to the top, and the groundfish committee concurred.
Mary Beth.
My understanding of this discussion to date would be that framework 24 to the scallop plan would become a joint action, and that the majority of the work would take place in the scallop PDT, who have already begun that analysis. But it's not possible to have a joint action without some input from the groundfish PDT, and that's why the issue was taken up by the groundfish committee and results in this motion.
Thank you. Paul.
So, I'll defer a little bit to Chris and Tom, but I would expect that since Annie's leaving and we've got to get this sector framework in as soon as possible, and we've got the framework to get all the ABCs and Gulf of Maine cod and everything, I think this is going to take away from that, I would think. I don't know how we can get. I don't know. I guess the answer is we'll do our best, but some things are going to have to give. This is a huge amount of work, in my opinion. But
okay. I am going to call the question on this. All those in favor of the motion, so indicate. Fourteen in favor, opposed. One, abstention. One, motion carries. Terry.
Tom, are you going to talk about the NOI or Sue? Notice of intent?
It's me, I think. Does the chair want me to do it now, or we actually have a couple other issues, and I know there's a few issues I think the audience may want to bring forward on ground.
Yes, I was aware that there was one, and I was going to ask them whether their intent was to be here tomorrow, or you want to get it. Okay, so once you come up, we're probably going to have to push the hearing back a few minutes, but we will do this, and then have to come back for the other issues first thing in the morning.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine, and joining me, Vito Gigliloni from the Northeast Seafood Coalition. Earlier today, the council received the very bad news regarding Georges Bank Cod, Gulf of Maine Haddock, and Witch Flounder that will require significant reductions in 2013. On the heels of that, we felt obliged to raise the profile of the economic ramifications to the groundfish fleet that will occur in just 1 week as a result of the massive reduction in ACL for Georges Bank Yellowtail. A combination of factors associated with setting that ACL has resulted in a total U.S. ACL of about 540 metric tons, which is half of the ACL that we had in 2011. In addition to the track assessment for yellowtail, other factors that influence the setting of that ACL are components of the U.S. sharing agreement, along with the Council's decision to allocate the sub-ACL to the scallop fleet based on need, and the fact that the scallop fleet's need is significant due to the fact that they have access to the Georges Bank access areas. So the Council allocated 300 metric tons to the scallop fleet and 200 to the groundfish fleet. We're not criticizing that allocation. We're just pointing out that that's one of the factors that resulted in us having what is close to probably a 70 or 80% reduction in the ACL for 2012, again, coming up in just 1 week. This reduction is obviously going to be devastating, and Vito has some information about the economic implications of that.
Yeah, we were just looking at it's about a 70% reduction in the PSC for most vessels. So needless to say, the directed yellowtail fishery, which has been very small to begin with, but in order to access the Georges Bank winter flounder stock, you're going to need to have Georges Bank yellowtail. And a lot of the boats in the Gulf of Maine that only had 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 pounds of yellowtail quota will now have 300, 400, or 1,000. It's as close to a total disaster as you could possibly get at this point. I'm just looking at just rough numbers. In addition to the 2 million pounds of Georges Bank yellowtail that would be lost in the U.S.-Canada move, it's the indirect stuff, 3 to 5 million pounds potentially of Georges Bank winter flounder, 3 million pounds of Georges Bank cod, 3 to 20 million pounds if the Georges Bank haddock ever decide to become catchable. A lot of that access will be precluded by a choke stock or Georges Bank yellowtail. And much of the skate wing fishery conducted in Georges Bank involves interacting with the yellowtail. So this translates to a loss potentially in the tens of millions of dollars to the region. It is the greatest threat we could think of that could happen, not only to push to additional pressure inshore, but also to the infrastructure throughout the entire region if we lose these boats in Georges Bank. So we need to communicate this to the council and to the secretary. I think if there were ever, I know we've been looking at a 2013 disaster and also this Gulf of Maine cod, 22%, but I think cumulatively when you put all of these together, this Georges Bank yellowtail thing, I think we have a declaration of a disaster that's warranted, and I think it's Section 312A. But this has to be on everyone's radar screen right now.
So we were hoping that the council could communicate to the secretary, you know, to use his discretion to determine if there is a disaster, an economic disaster, for the New England groundfish fleet as a result of these significant reductions that will certainly devastate those fishermen who are most dependent on fishing in the Georges Bank regulated mesh area.
Also, U.S.-Canada sharing agreement, just to point out, there's been a shift based on the original agreement. There was a move to go away from historical need, historical catch, and historical landings, and shift more towards the what was coming out of the trawl surveys and the spatial distribution as indicated by the trawl surveys. We've lost over time. The U.S. share has gone from 75% of the yellowtail tack to, for the first time ever, less than 50%. We're now at 49%. You know, the Bigelow is a great ship, and there's an awful lot of issues going on right now that I think it's going to take some time for us to know what the effects of the calibration are. But I think having a 90% reliance on spatial distribution on this stock is also very scary at this point in time, and not sure if it's worthwhile. Actually, we think it might be worthwhile relooking at some of the criteria that we use for splitting the shares, you know, in the U.S.-Canada agreement.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. I am going to recommend that, I've written it down, that the when we get back to groundfish in the morning, we address the request that you've made to us so that we can, you know, debate that here and take that up. Rich?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't want to debate this tonight. We're already falling behind on the public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just very quickly, you know, being out of New Bedford with the yellowtail fleet, just for an example, PSC last year for a fleet owner was 700,000 pounds of yellowtail. The PSC for that fleet owner this year is 64,000 pounds for the whole year. I have a vessel we are unloading right now in New Bedford for tomorrow's auction that has 40,000 pounds of yellow on board. This is very devastating. A lot of the vessels that can't fish anymore, the vessels that did go after yellowtail flounder, skates, etc., who are tied up to the dock and leasing out their PSC, one vessel, 30,000 pounds of yellowtails that he's been leasing out. Well, next year he has 3,000 pounds to lease out. So it is devastating. You will be hearing from New Bedford, not as a threat, but as we need help. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to say that we wrap it up for this evening. There is the hearing for the Herring Amendment 5 is coming up. I just wanted to make one notation for the people who are here to listen to that, into that.